Arizona News Radio Phoenix Police released results of a review of statistics that made them the kidnapping capital of the world.
A Phoenix police audit finds that out of 408 reported kidnappings, 75% meet kidnapping criteria. Those that didn't fell into categories like aggravated assault and armed robbery at the moment were believed to be tied to kidnapping, but later turned out not to be.
A Pima County inmate died after trying to swallow a baggie containing an unknown substance and then fighting with a detention officer.
Shortly after the altercation, he stopped breathing, CPR, the Heimlich maneuver, and an AED were used in an attempt to revive him until paramedics arrived.
Peoria police looking for a black male who tried to abduct a 16-year-old girl.
You know, she made a ruckus, she struggled, she fought back. You know, it doesn't appear that she caught anyone's attention, but she made enough noise to scare the assailant off.
Protesters at the state capitol concerned about cuts Republicans want to make in the new budget. George Tanner, Arizona News.
And this KFNX traffic report is brought to you by 1-800-SAFE-AUTO. Looking at the Black Canyon right now, northbound side of things, you're going to find an accident on the right shoulder right before Indian School Road. Litchfield Road in Yuma has a fender bender, so expect delays there. And we're going to have some traffic building southbound on the Pima between Shea and the Loop 101. Safe Auto won't insure your boat, your camper, or your home. All Safe Auto insures is that car you own. Safe Auto keeps you legal for less because that's all they do. Call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO 24/7.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Well, we continue this mini heat wave, wrapping up the month of March tomorrow with 94 degrees, and we bring in April even hotter, 97 on Friday, but that should be about it. We do see some cooling, up to 10 degrees of cooling by the weekend. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
And currently at our downtown studios, we're sitting at 86 degrees. Next news in 30 minutes, a winter breaks here on KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Is trying to sneak out of a really boring meeting wearing tap shoes a bad idea?
Sales growth has increased 2.9%. That's a reflection of aggressive... Ben, where are you going?
Nowhere. Headed back to my seat now.
Switch to GEICO now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Does a rolling stone gather no moss? No moss. You're gonna have to trust me on this one.
Switch to GEICO now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
This is Legalese, where the law is always on your side. Now introducing your host, a longtime veteran of the courts, Dennis Willinchek.
Well, good afternoon. It's Wednesday again, 4 to 5. It's Dennis Willinchek, Pride of the Lou Dobbs Show, talking about legal issues that may be of interest to some of you, hopefully most of you. We're here at KFNX Studios in Midtown, Phoenix. Our number is 602-277-KFNX. That's 277-5369. If you care to call in, glad to talk to you about any issues that might be on your mind. There are so many different legal issues in the news today, it's hard to know where to begin. We have the Supreme Court in session. That's always, some people think, a dangerous time. But the U.S. Supreme Court is in session and trying to issue opinions before June. And it's been a busy week in the United States Supreme Court. Yesterday, there was an argument in the Dukes versus Walmart case, which has gathered a lot of attention and publicity. This is a case some of you may know, which potentially could be the largest class action suit ever filed in the United States' history. And case goes back a ways, deals with gender discrimination involving women who worked at Walmart, claiming that they were not properly treated and properly advanced. And there's a lot of interesting issues in this case, proof issues for one thing. The issues in the Supreme Court dealt with a lot of procedural issues. On Monday, there were arguments Also, in another case, a little closer to home, Arizona Free Enterprise Club's Freedom Club PAC, PAC, Political Action Committee, versus Bennett. And in that case, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, the issue is whether Arizona's clean elections law violates the First Amendment. Some of you know that this case is being brought by the Goldwater Institute, which we've heard a lot about recently in the news. They're getting a lot of publicity and press. We had a guest on last week from the Goldwater Institute on our show to talk about some of the work that they do, basically to protect civil liberties. Sometimes their actions cause a lot of controversy. Right now, of course, they're in the news and getting that controversy for opposing the city of Glendale's proposal to pay Chicago businessman Matthew Holsizer some $100 million in subsidies to help purchase the Coyotes hockey team. A lot of people have weighed in on that. Senator McCain, for one, has been in the news. And, of course, a lot of other people are interested in that case. But this Arizona Free Enterprise Club, Freedom Club versus Bennett, is an interesting matter that the Supreme Court heard earlier in the week relating to the Clean Elections Law. And various senators brought action, basically, which wound up in the Supreme Court, claiming that their First Amendment rights were violated by the matching funds provision. And as many of you know, some people can run by putting their own money in or raising money. Others then who choose not to get the benefit of basically matching those funds. And a lot of people are upset about this system because they feel that it's just simply unfair because it somehow prohibits the people that don't use the system or chills, if you will, their First Amendment rights to speak freely because then they give their opponents an opportunity to raise money to speak equally. So a lot of interesting issues on that case. Coming back to the issue of subsidies, though, as I said, a lot of you have heard about the Goldwater Institute trying to stop the city of Glendale from going through the proposal to help offset the cost of the Coyotes hockey team. And the Goldwater Institute, as I say, has a long history of suing governmental entities that try to give out money to encourage development. Some of you may be surprised to know that the Arizona Supreme Court has actually agreed with them in certain instances. Back in 2007, the Goldwater Institute gained some publicity suing the city of Phoenix after it paid more than $97 million to the developer of the City North development in North Scottsdale. In that case, the Institute had argued that the subsidy violated the gift clause of the Arizona Constitution, which says that the government shall not, quote, make any donation or grant by subsidy or otherwise to any individual, association, or corporation. The case was argued all the way up to the Arizona Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court actually agreed with the Goldwater Institute's position and ruled that the subsidy to City North was, in fact, illegal. The court said, however, that because the law was not clear at the time that the deal with City North had been made, that the deal would stand. But the court did indicate in the opinion for future reference that it would be illegal for the government to give money outright without expecting anything equivalent in return or in legal terminology to give money without consideration. And so the issue boils down to what is given basically in return. And so these deals wind up getting structured in ways that are very complicated, involving numerous attorneys trying to come up with ways to make sure that there is no outright grant that can be claimed or subsidy by the city. Question I have for you listening at home today is, in general, are these subsidies a good idea? What do you think? The Arizona Supreme Court may say it's illegal for Arizona to give money to help businesses out, but should it be? Can cities, governmental entities, in fact, attract the kind of entertainment and venues and businesses without some kind of subsidy in the real world, particularly in these hard times? And, of course, do taxpayers find that offensive? To me, it's a very fine line because, on the one hand, we want to encourage, obviously, all kinds of innovative and fun things to do with our time, which includes sports venues and so forth. But on the other hand, in these tough times, one has to question how the use of money is doled out. And traditionally in the past, it was clear that many of these businesses, as well as entertainment venues that would come to town, would certainly need tax breaks to do so. Others have argued that those tax breaks are really unnecessary and constitute favoritism to some of these folks that get them. And that's where the equivalency in the gift comes into play. What does the city get back in return? And can, in fact, a city justify some of these dole-outs on the basis that, in fact, the city is receiving in return something equal or greater than what it's giving out? Of course, the problem there is you get long-term payouts, and it's very difficult sometimes to account for whether or not the city is, in fact, getting some of these returns. Now, I question whether some of these payouts really do result in dollar-for-dollar returns, but I also question whether or not they need to. Putting the law aside for the moment, what is your thoughts on that? You may have some thoughts, and if you do, give us a call on that if you have strong feelings about this. Do we have to justify the fact that in order to obtain some of these businesses and or entertainment sports-type venues, that we need to give out city money to do it, to jumpstart these projects? As you know, many of these projects are failing. The entertainment district that was slated for downtown Phoenix near the stadium has never gotten off the ground. Again, giving out government money has to be done carefully, but is it necessary? And is it something that we want to do to attract what some would argue to be a better way of life? Or does it hurt us more in the long run? What about this deal with the Coyotes? Do people actually go out to Glendale and make a point of going out there and spending money because of this team being out there? Or is it just a waste of money? And do we really need the team and the subsidy given by the city, particularly if it's unclear whether it will actually get back an equivalent return? So we're going to take a break shortly, but let me know your thoughts on that. If you're out there listening, driving in your car, give us a call, 277-KFNX-5369, and let us know your thoughts on these subsidies. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some of these cases that I introduced at the beginning of the show in the U.S. Supreme Court. This is Dennis Wilnicek, and we'll be back after these messages.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wilnicek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wilnicek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wilnicek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
Lohman's Arizona Funeral Home reminds listeners to salute our fighting men and women of the American military. Whether they are currently serving or an American veteran, they are our friends, our family, and our protectors. Let's make sure that they truly know how much we appreciate them putting their lives on the line for ours. From Lohman's Arizona Funeral Home, located at 717 West Dobson Road in Phoenix, call 602-276-3601. That's 602-276-3601, where they salute the men and women of our American military.
The ASU College of Nursing and Health Innovation offers exercise and wellness, health sciences, kinesiology, nutrition, and nursing degree programs. These quality academic programs prepare graduates to become healthcare providers, leaders, researchers, and health advocates. We are large enough to offer 5 career tracks, but small enough to offer individualized student learning and intensive mentoring. For information, visit nursingandhealth.asu.edu. That's nursingandhealth.asu.edu.
Start saving money today. BYOBudget.com is a simple web-based system that lets you build your own customized budget. With BYOBudget.com, there are no books to read, no need to provide personal info. This advanced technology helps you save time and money. Your own customized budget for personal or business use on an easy-to-read one-page layout. No salespeople to contact. Just go to BYOBudget.com, a money-saving budget system for everyone. All ages, all incomes, budget wisely. Save money. BYOBudget.com.
Well, good afternoon again. This is Dennis Willinchek, law firm of Willinchek & Bartness. We're here at the KFNX studios, 277-KFNX, 277-5369. And we've been talking about legal issues. This is what the program's about, legalese. Wanted to mention before we get rolling into some of these cases that have been before the court that Bill Montgomery, our current county attorney for Maricopa County, who was recently elected, defeated Richard Romley in a stunning victory, will be our guest next week. Bill has agreed to come on and talk to us about things that are pertinent and going on at the county attorney's office and hot topics down there. Lots going on, a lot of cases being prosecuted. Bill, as you know from reading the papers, has been working with the County Board of Supervisors in a cooperative way to try to solve some of those battles and wars that have been going on that have made the news. And he'll be with us next week, next Wednesday from 4 to 5. And then the following week, we're going to have a show with Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Again, Wednesdays, 4 to 5 here on KFNX. And Sheriff Joe has agreed to come on the show and talk to us about some of the controversial things he's involved in, of course, including, obviously, immigration, Senate Bill 1070, a lot of these roundups, his plans in the future. Some people are talking about the sheriff running even for senator. And we'll have an opportunity to ask him those questions when he comes on board. That'll be 2 weeks from today. So hope you join us then, and should be interesting shows coming up the next week and the week after that. But right now let's talk about some of the things going on in the Supreme Court. As I said earlier, there's this big class action going on involving Walmart. Arguments were heard. They didn't go well for the plaintiff in the Walmart class action case. Again, the plaintiff is trying to establish a class action. One of the issues in that case, simply put, is that how do you have a class action involving millions of people over the many years that Walmart's been in business with one lead plaintiff, if you will, to essentially represent the interests of an entire class when there's so many different factors, so many different distinctions, so many different circumstances, factually and otherwise, separating all these different plaintiffs. So it's a very interesting case as to whether or not you really can establish a class of people, even if the merits, the actual case itself has merits. It's still very difficult procedurally to establish this kind of class action, and very difficult for plaintiffs to proceed on these actions. On the other hand, obviously, one individual plaintiff suing a large corporation like a Walmart has real problems. Many lawyers don't want to take cases like that. It costs a lot of money, and the only way they can justify it is if they have a group of people like a class and certify the case as a class where they can then proceed, and the end result could involve a lot more money than one individual. So arguments were heard in this Dukes versus Walmart case, in which over a half a million female Walmart employees are seeking class action status in order to sue Walmart for sexual discrimination in pay and promotions. And if they're allowed to all bring one case, it would be apparently the largest class action suit in United States history. But in order to do that, they have to show that every single one of their cases involves a common issue of fact and law. That's, as I say, very, very difficult to do, given the wide range of instances and disparity in facts and factual scenarios and people and the reasons why people are hired and fired. Justice Anthony Kennedy and the other Supreme Court justices indicated in an argument pretty strongly, basically they didn't buy the plaintiff's theory of the case. The women are arguing that Walmart has a, quote, culture that discriminates against them in terms of pay and promotions, and that this, quote, culture affects every single Walmart store. Again, very difficult concepts to establish cultures and things of that nature when you're talking about so many different stores. You have to establish that basically the head of the company, essentially, there's a policy that permeates and goes down the line in every one of these stores and is followed. To establish that, you almost have to establish that there is, as I say, some kind of single policy decision made, which is almost impossible to ever prove. This culture is something that may exist in fact, but it's another thing in a courtroom to prove this kind of thing. The problem is that the women admit that pay and promotions in every Walmart store are completely controlled by nobody but the manager in that store. And because of that, as I say, it's very difficult for them to establish that there is a single controlling individual or individuals that demand or dictate the hiring, firing, promotion, and pay of the various individuals trying to sue. Each manager obviously could easily have different reasons for not promoting or underpaying his employees, making it impossible for them, that is the plaintiffs, to all try their case as one case. Well, no matter what the court says, Walmart's already succeeded in blunting the force of the allegations against it by creating a, quote, breathtaking pretrial delay. It's been more than 10 years. Incredible. More than 10 years since this case was originally filed against Walmart, and it's still nowhere near trial even. We're talking here about a case in front of the U.S. Supreme Court just on procedural issues and procedural grounds as to whether they even get to establish a class to proceed to do discovery, not even close to being a case that's ready for trial after 10 long years. So even if the justices rule in favor of the women, it could easily take another 10 to 11 years or longer to finally get this case resolved. Well, that's just amazing, isn't it? But that's the legal system sometimes. It takes a long time, a lot of hard work, a lot of money, and sometimes a lot of disappointment for people in this kind of category to proceed. So we'll follow that case in the next few weeks. There should probably be a decision soon, and we'll see what the court says, whether these women can proceed on this case or not. The other case that I want to talk about before our next break, if I can, is the Clean Elections case. And this is, of course, as I said, closer to home because the plaintiffs in the Clean Elections case before the United States Supreme Court again seem very poised to win the case. At issue is the Arizona law passed back in 1998 that allows candidates to receive public funding for their campaign in order to match the money raised by private fundraisers. A lot of talk about this law and whether or not this law is going to survive in the legislature is another hot issue that we can talk about as well. A lot of doubts about clean elections and a lot of strong statements by clean elections as to its efficacy and its success in allowing people who couldn't otherwise have a chance of collecting money and raising money to have a chance to run for office. So it's very difficult, as you know, to run. And as a result, this law has been praised by a lot of people as well. Well, Justice Anthony Kennedy showed his hand at the oral arguments on Monday, strongly suggesting that he would decide in favor of striking down this law. At one point during the arguments, he even asked, quote, "Do you think it would be fair to say that the purpose of this law is to produce less speech in political campaigns?" The law is generally expected to be struck down by the court, so experts say, and a columnist has said, good riddance to it. In USA Today, the columnist stated that the law punishes traditionally funded candidates by arming less popular rivals with public cash, undermining better finance candidates' message, and effectively discouraging free speech. The columnist stated that the Constitution doesn't let states skew the political playing field to favor government-funded candidates. You know, what do you think about that out there? There's arguments on both sides of this, as is typical, that are both equally strong. On the one hand, a lot of politicians will tell you that it's important to go out and raise money, not so much even for the raising of the money, which is critical, but because it develops a groundswell among people. They get out and they meet people, they talk to people, and if no one will put up money to back their campaigns and support them, it says something about their campaign. It says something about the process. And if you can get people excited enough to actually contribute money out of their pocket, it's important, according to a lot of politicians, to do that. So that's why they go through that process rather than going with the probably easier, obviously, method of using clean elections. But the problem is, does that really promote clean elections, this process? A lot of people say it just puts another government dole out again from our pockets to subsidize people who otherwise couldn't get elected, not necessarily because they can't go out and raise money, because maybe there's a reason they can't raise money. Maybe the reason they can't get elected is because nobody wants to support them and actually put money into their campaigns. So a lot of issues, a lot of issues. And, of course, clean elections has had a significant effect on our local elections here. David Shapiro, a 31-year-old former high school math teacher who's the youngest member of the state Senate, as well as a Democratic leader, credits his rapid rise in politics, the Clean Elections Act. So do many other politicians. But, again, there are just as many people on the opposite side saying that it creates nothing positive except another drain on the taxpayer dollar. So if you have any thoughts on that, give us a call at 277-KFNX, and we will be talking about that and other issues when we come back after our break. We'll be talking about Clarence Thomas, Arizona guns on campus bills, Arizona's merit system for judicial selections, and we'll be talking about some funny issues in the news after we return from these messages. So talk to you after these messages. Dennis Wolinchek, KFNX.
Is there really an energy shortage? Tune in Thursday night at 8 p.m. for the Renewable Power Hour, where host Jason Leopold will apply his degree in engineering to the question, how will we power the future? The Renewable Power Hour, Thursday at 8 p.m.
Laura Ingram, Neil Bortz, Steve Malzberg, Lou Dobbs, KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, the voice of the valley.
CNN Radio. I'm Barbara Hall. A big setback tonight for Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. CNN's Nick Robertson reports his longtime member of his inner circle, Foreign Minister Moussa Koussa, flew to London and announced his resignation.
This is a man who's got a lot of secrets on this regime and whose departure is going to cause ripples to flow through many other senior figures here.
A U.S. intelligence source confirms the presence of CIA operations in the country, but the source would not confirm the order for covert action was signed by President Obama. Officials in Japan admit they have no idea when the nuclear crisis in the country will end. The government says all six reactors at the crippled Fukushima Daiichi plant will eventually be shut down. A small plane crashed into two homes in High Point, North Carolina this afternoon. One of them caught fire. It's unclear whether anyone was hurt. This is CNN Radio.
Arizona News Radio, Phoenix Police released results of a review of statistics that made them the kidnapping capital of the world.
A Phoenix police audit finds that out of 408 reported kidnappings, 75% meet kidnapping criteria. Those that didn't fell into categories like aggravated assault and armed robbery that at the moment were believed to be tied to kidnapping, but later turned out not to be.
A Pima County inmate died after trying to swallow a baggie containing an unknown substance and then fighting with a detention officer.
Shortly after the altercation, he stopped breathing, CPR, the Heimlich maneuver, and an AED were used in an attempt to revive him until paramedics arrived.
Peoria police looking for a black male who tried to abduct a 16-year-old girl.
You know, she made a ruckus. She struggled. She fought back. You know, it doesn't appear that she caught anyone's attention, but she made enough noise to scare the assailant off.
And protesters at the state capitol concerned about cuts Republicans want to make in the new budget. George Tanner, Arizona News.
And this KFNX traffic report is brought to you by Roads Bake and Serve. The left shoulder in the westbound 10 right of the tunnel has two vehicles involved in an accident. You're going to find some slight delays on the Pima westbound side of things between Tatum and the 51. And we do have an injury accident where the right lane's being blocked westbound on the Superstition at Dobson. DPS is on the scene there. Wake up to Hot Roads Bake and Serve cinnamon rolls topped with real cream cheese frosting. Roads Bake and Serve cinnamon rolls in your grocer's freezer.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Well, we continue this mini heat wave, wrapping up the month of March tomorrow with 94 degrees, and we bring in April even hotter, 97 on Friday, but that should be about it. We do see some cooling, up to 10 degrees of cooling by the weekend. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
And currently at our downtown studios, we're sitting at 86 degrees. Next news in 30 minutes when winter breaks here on KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
First Option Lending, the people you call first.
Are you in double trouble? Do you have a first and a second mortgage that totals slightly more than your home is worth? Have you been turned down by banks and mortgage companies that simply can't help? First Option Lending can help. We've even helped people who were told by others to just walk away from their home. Nonsense. If you're upside down in your primary home but have a steady job and pay your mortgage on time, call today, because this opportunity and these record low rates may soon be gone. We can get you out of double trouble, because double trouble is no trouble at First Option Lending. First Option Lending, 480-751-3400. 751-3400.
First Option Lending.
480-751-3400.
License 19017.
London Gold. It's the best.
When I said yes, it's because you said you would love me for the rest of my life. When I said yes, it's because I felt the same. Now, it's my turn to ask you the big question. Do you know that a woman can never have too many diamonds? There's a reason for the expression, diamonds are a girl's best friend. Oh, but don't get jealous, because my love for you is very different than my love for diamonds.
London Gold has been helping couples express their love with diamonds for over 30 years at three Valley locations. Browse the largest selection of diamond stud earrings in the Southwest, located in Scottsdale, Arrowhead, and Chandler, and at LondonGold.com. London Gold, voted best in Phoenix and always better than a sale, with recent price reductions on thousands of your favorite items. Take the guesswork out of gift giving. Diamonds are a safe bet, and they never go out of style.
London Gold.
Well, this is Dennis Wolinchek. It's about 25 to 5. We're here from 4 to 5 every Wednesday talking about legal issues. And we have serious stories, funny stories for you, some that will tickle you, some that will get you angry. Our number here is 277-KFNX, 277-5369. And with me today, I have Jack Wolinchek, my son, who is a paralegal in our office, going to law school presently. And he's going to give us a little primer on some of the hot legal issues that we can talk about here that are in the news. Jack, welcome aboard.
Thanks, Dennis. Yeah, the first issue I have to talk about, we've done a lot of very boring news about the Supreme Court.
It's never boring, totally.
On the lighter side of things, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas is making history for the second time since he was...
Did he make history the first time?
Yeah. The first time had to do with a Coke can and a certain kind of hair that we can't mention on the radio.
That's right.
But he's making history for a second time for not having said a single thing in court for over 5 years.
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. The last time he spoke was back in 2006.
Maybe he has a hair caught in his throat.
Yeah, the last time he spoke was in 2006. He has blown away the previous record, which was set 40 years ago, if you can believe that. 40 years ago, by a Supreme Court justice who went for an entire year without saying a single thing.
I thought you were going to say entire year without being alive.
It's hard to tell with these guys sometimes whether they're alive or not. I agree with that.
Well, seriously, he hasn't asked one question the entire time he's been on the court?
Not one question.
I can't believe that.
It is hard to believe. Most Supreme Court justices ask an average of 16 questions per argument, but not Mr. Thomas. In particular, Antonin Scalia asked so many questions that the average number of questions that a Supreme Court justice asks has risen by 20% due to him alone.
Meaning the other justices want to counteract him?
That could be. In fact, Clarence Thomas has offered several explanations for why he has not spoken in court.
But why does Antonin Scalia speak so much?
Nobody knows. Just as nobody knows why Clarence Thomas doesn't speak. Among Mr. Thomas's explanations for why he does not speak in court, number one, he is self-conscious about his accent. Number two, he feels like the bench already asks enough questions. Number three, he thinks that another justice will probably ask his question for him. Number four, he thinks that he learns more by listening than by talking. And number five, he thinks it is counterproductive to interrupt lawyers in the middle of their arguments.
Do you really think, though, that's the reason? Do you think the real reason would probably be that, given his history, he's probably a little concerned that whatever he says is going to be closely scrutinized and criticized, and therefore it's best to just sometimes say nothing?
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. I know that Clarence Thomas did have a rough nomination process and confirmation process. It could be that he's still smarting from that years later. Nobody knows.
High-tech lynching.
A high-tech congressional lynching. Our next news item.
Wait a second. Do you think that Clarence Thomas has gotten the message now because of this? Because I've heard this out there, this story, and you think he's now going to start peeping up a little bit and feeling his oats?
To be honest, I don't. To me, it kind of sounds like, I'm a law student, and part of our grade depends on participating in class. Kind of sounds to me like when you ask somebody why they're not speaking up in class, he's got all the same reasons. He thinks everybody else is asking questions already. And
yeah, but here's the difference. You get a grade in class. He doesn't. And secondly, not only does he not get a grade, but he's there for life, regardless of whether he asks any questions or not. I guess he just shows up. And, you know, the other interesting thing about that is I wonder if what would happen, maybe it's something worth looking at, kind of a fun topic, to see whether or not any justice has never shown up for arguments at all. That's another issue.
Yeah, I honestly do not know. We can report back on just how incompetent our justices have been. Maybe we'll make that the topic of
I'm serious.
Show.
I mean, they're appointed for life, and if they don't show up and they dial it in, who cares?
No repercussions.
What is the repercussion?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
On that same subject, we have another item.
By the way, excuse me for interrupting, but I did have an argument once in the Court of Appeals in Arizona where a judge was unable to attend. And rather than canceling, they went forward with the other two judges, but they promised that the judge would listen to the tapes because there are tapes that are taken of these arguments. And by the way, they're available on websites, which people should probably know, that they can go on the Arizona Court of Appeals website and actually listen to, and Supreme Court, and actually listen to the arguments if they choose to do so. But they promised the judge would listen to the tape recordings of the arguments and then rule, which they did. So I guess the answer is there's probably nothing preventing them from just not even showing up at all. And one wonders why he does show up if he doesn't ask anything, but I guess he learns from the other questions he's saying. By the same token, I guess Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor, I've heard, are very active already on the bench.
Yeah, on that same subject, on the subject that judges, at least federal judges, are appointed for life. Isn't that right, Dennis?
Yes.
Just like Supreme Court judges. The oldest federal judge in the United States just turned 103. he's in the district court in Wichita, Kansas. He's lightening his caseload, says the news. His law clerk says that he's removing himself from the draw for assignment of new criminal cases.
Well, that's big of him.
Yeah, he has an oxygen tank that he has to use as he resides from the bench because, according to his clerk, the lengthy plea hearings take a lot of oxygen from him. He was appointed to the federal bench by President John F. Kennedy.
He doesn't talk much like Clarence Thomas because it would take too much out of him.
Yeah, at least this guy has an excuse. He was appointed to the federal bench by President Kennedy in 1962, turns 104, of course, next June. And I guess he's still at it. He's going to continue to preside over fewer cases, but he still has cases remaining on his docket, both criminal and civil cases.
Does it appear he's still actually mentally competent and sane?
Well, like we were saying, that's not part of it. You're appointed for life, and you can be as insane and mentally incompetent as you want to be.
Well, you know, there is an impeachment process for even judges. Certain district court judges in the past have been impeached. There was one, Alcee Hastings in Florida, many years ago, that was impeached. And so it's an interesting t- topic, they can stay on for life. And in this case, it's a long life, but one wonders why they would want to. Most of the judges go on senior status at a certain point when they reach retirement age, typical retirement age. But some of them decide, or Judge Carroll in Arizona is one who has stayed on the bench well past senior status and retirement age. Apparently enjoys coming to court every day. Got to wonder about whether that's something that needs to change, this appointment for life, pros and cons, right?
Yeah, on that same subject, our next story is about Arizona's merit system for judicial elections. There's been a big push underway here in Arizona to change the way that judges are chosen. Various bills under consideration, this and probably for the next session in the legislature, call for the removal of the Arizona State Bar in the nomination process. Can you explain how that works, Dennis?
Well, yeah, before we take our break, there's a process by which lawyers are selected by the State Bar Association to sit on the merit selection panel along with private citizens. And basically they then interview, after reviewing applications, they interview the people that they want to weed down basically into a group that then is selected by the governor. What the legislature right now is doing is trying, there's a whole series of different bills, I think, but one of the main things they're trying to do right now is to eliminate, essentially, seems to have gained some traction, the state bar from the entire, from the process entirely, so that it would be private citizens, governor appointment, and then approval, apparently, I think, by the Senate, and regular reapproval by the Senate after 8 years, which is a little bit longer than the terms they presently serve. So a lot of interesting issues on that, and I think they're trying to negotiate something right now that works for everybody. We're going to come back after the break and talk further about that, though, Jack, because there really are a lot of interesting policy issues relating to that. We'll be back after the break. This is Dennis Wilenchek on KFNX, 277-KFNX, if you want to call in, and after these messages.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wilenchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wilenchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wilenchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
More than you really want to know. The Neil Bortz Show.
I'm just telling you, enjoy your life, make the most out of it, do what you can to protect yourself and your children, but this thing is coming to an end, folks.
Weekdays beginning at 10 a.m. on KFNX.
Help, I need somebody.
Dave, is it really all doom and gloom out there?
Well, Rick, I can think of one bright spot.
Mondays at noon, here on KFNX.
The Elton Realty Show.
Your real estate survival guides.
I seriously can't believe you're going to do this.
Hey, man, believe it.
Look, I know you'll learn stuff that'll help you with a job in engineering, but, buddy, listen, once you walk through those doors,
No.
Yes,
look,
yes.
Look, I'm still going to be here at home.
Huh?
I'm going to keep my job, work full time, hang out with you, and be a soldier.
I don't get it.
You're completely clueless about the National Guard, aren't you?
The National Guard is a unique opportunity and a unique experience. You're a soldier. You serve your community as well as your country. You train part-time close to home. And you do it all while you work or attend college full-time.
Look at you. Now you're even thinking about it. You're going to walk in with me, aren't you?
All right, wipe that smile off your face.
Oh, come on. You know you want to come in.
Take the first steps to building your career while serving your community and country part-time. Start at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Hey, this is Dennis Wilenchek. It's our weekly legalese show from 4 to 5. Our number here at the studio, 277-KFNX. We're in the Midtown studios of KFNX, and I'm here with Jack Wilenchek, a paralegal in our office, and we're talking about legal issues. So if you want to join us, feel free to call us at 277-KFNX. That's 5369. We're talking right now about judicial selection, merit selection. A lot of controversy surrounding how judges are picked in Arizona. as you may know, in Maricopa County and Pima County, the two largest counties, the judges are selected by a, quote, merit selection system, which is different than the outlying counties where judges are elected. Jack, what is going on now in that regard? I know you've looked into this issue.
Right. A lot of judges, not surprisingly, current judges oppose the changes. Some of the history is a little bit interesting. For several decades following statehood, which was 1912, candidates for most judicial offices in Arizona were elected through primaries and through general elections, in which voters often had the opportunity to choose among candidates. Hoping to change that and do what could be done to take judges out of politics, voters, with the encouragement in particular of the Arizona Republic, the Arizona Academy, and several other civic groups, changed the system in 1974 by approving a merit system, which is our current system, for selecting judges to the Arizona Supreme Court, State Court of Appeals, and the Superior Court, or the general, which is a word for trial courts, in the two largest counties, Maricopa and Pima.
Now, let me just ask you before you go on. So the idea was to take politics out of the system in these large counties, but why not in the small counties? That never made any sense to me. Why is politics different in one county than another? And secondly, does it substitute this politics for a small group of people getting to decide who becomes a judge and keeping the public out of that process, which is, I think, what the opponents of the current system are exercised about, that they feel that it transfers the will of the people to a small select group. And that's where I think the legislature may be coming from and saying, look, we want to keep the state bar out of this because they basically select their own. Under the new proposed system, as I understand it, anybody can apply who qualifies, and all of those names have to be sent up for the governor to then select who the governor would then nominate to the Senate to be appointed, and they'd have to go through Senate proceedings, I suppose, to answer to the Senate. Obviously, this whole change in the system would require a constitutional amendment, so ultimately the people would be the ones to determine this. Is that right?
I'm not certain it does require a constitutional amendment, or if it does, the legislature doesn't know that it does.
I think it would have to require a constitutional amendment to change the system, but that may be an issue open to some debate. But anyway, so you were saying that following 74, this actually went into place, I think, in around 77, didn't it?
That could be right. The movement was around 74, according to my report here. The plan was patterned after another plan that was used in Missouri. Missourians had opted for a mixed system combining two approaches. They had the idea to have the nonpartisan commission to screen candidates. The idea, as you said, was to take politics out of it and to make sure the judges could be both experts in responsive to the voters. As I said before, a lot of judges are against this. None other than Sandra Day O'Connor was quoted as saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Also, Ruth McGregor, who is a former Supreme Court Justice, Arizona Supreme Court Justice, was quoted as asking, what's the problem you're trying to resolve? A lot of judges don't see a problem with the current system and would like to keep it.
Well, you know, we were just talking earlier before the break about the federal system. You had a judge who you mentioned was 104 years old, still sitting on the bench. I think probably the system being proposed now that probably has the best chance of passage would probably make our system in the two major counties more like the federal system. Would that be a fair assessment as you see it of what's going on right now?
That does sound that sounds right.
So, I mean, I think the idea is to make it more uniform in nature. I'm not sure why Justice O'Connor would be opposed to that, but I think her point is well taken that where is the problem? I think the problem is probably more in public perception that, frankly, that probably liberal judges have taken over the bench, is what I hear a lot out on the street, and it's more a perception issue. I know that Judge O'Neill, I think you were mentioning to me off during the break, who is now the basically the disciplinary judge of the state bar now, had some comments, didn't he, about his experience now that he's off the bench in terms of running for election in Pinal County. I believe he was a Republican, but he had some issues with that. Is that right?
That's right. Judge O'Neill's quote is saying some of the aspects of elections that are good are that are the ones they're trying to get rid of. Judges have obvious power when they are on the bench. They have prestige when they're off the bench. If they will utilize it in order to interact with communities, we are in fact entirely related to one another, one to another through relationships. So a judge who runs for office must necessarily get into the communities. That's probably the most single most important aspect of elections, he was quoted as saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think the push that's going on right now is to supposedly bring the process more in line with the control by the people as opposed to the lawyers. That's always been a tension in the process in the legislature. This kind of comes up every now and then to try to change the system. You know, we had another aspect of the system that was instituted by the Arizona Supreme Court some time ago, which revamped the way in which judges are evaluated. I used to be the chairman of the Judicial Evaluation Poll Committee many years ago in the county. And, you know, there were various ways in which we tried to get feedback on the various judges so that the public could be intelligently understanding when they voted for these judges. I think part of the criticism of the current system is nobody knows these judges. There's too many of them. There's too many on the ballot. When they come up for simply retention, most people simply retain them, is the argument, and don't really know who they are and what their decisions are. So there's a lack of education. And part of the process now involves a system whereby lawyers get to comment and fill out forms after they have hearings in front of the judges so that these are compiled and supposedly related to the public as to the lawyers' feelings, at least, who theoretically represent the public that they represent, and what their reactions to these judges are. Whether that's adequately publicized or not to the majority of people is the problem. I think access to that information is the problem. And I think people don't know enough about what's being done to give them that information. And so when they go to vote, they basically call their friends who may be lawyers and ask them, you know, what do you think about some of these judges? But a lot of lawyers don't appear in front of judges regularly. So that was the idea behind the politicking behind campaigning, to get judges out there in the public, meeting people, talking to them, seeing that they're normal human beings. And that kind of went a little bit out of the way, given the current system now, where it's sort of more of a closed-door session as to who gets selected. And I think that's what the push is presently. I believe that there's probably merit on both sides of this argument. And I think there was a good editorial today by Robert Robb in the Arizona Republic on it. Maybe we can have him on a future show if he'll be good enough to appear, because he does a good job of explaining some of this and some of the pros and cons to it. But there are definitely arguments on both sides. And I think at the end of the day, what's probably going to happen is there'll probably be some kind of compromise reached between the courts who want to preserve the system as it is now and between the legislature. Anyway, we have a few minutes. Any other interesting stories in the world of law?
Yeah, well, we'll finish up the show with one funny story. There's a judge in Canada who has been coming under a lot of flack lately because he's fancies himself a novelist. He's a criminal judge, and according to University of Windsor law professor David Tanovich, he is out of control. He has been spicing up his opinions lately. Some examples of his literary mastery are, quote, "On a cold weekend in late January 2000, the lengthy but brittle relationship between Michael Luciano, Colleen Luciano, and James Cooper ended abruptly and violently, first in Woodbridge, then in Edmondville. Two deaths. Colleen Luciano died first in Woodbridge, stabbed to death. A day later, James Cooper died in Edmondville by asphyxiation and strangulation." There's been a lot of outcry over...
What's wrong with that? That sounds like a good novel.
It reads a lot more dramatically, or it's maybe too dramatic.
Don't some of these judges have to have some fun?
Not according to University of Windsor law professor David Tanovich.
He doesn't like that idea.
He does not. In a murder case last year, Judge Watt began his opinion, "Handguns and drug deals are frequent companions, but not good friends. Rip-offs happen. Shootings do, too." Another one begins, "Early one morning in June 2006, Melvin Flores closed the book on his relationship with Sidney McDonald, period, with a butcher knife embedded in Sidney's back, period. 53 blunt force injuries." Apparently this is too sensational for legal opinion.
I think they're like good lawyers, and they're former lawyers. They need to get some attention, and get people interested, I guess, in their decisions. And maybe sometimes they get carried away a little bit. There's been lots of examples of that. And famous judges, Judge Learned Hand, Judge Cardozo, always tried to turn a phrase. So there's been a lot of that, actually, over the years in law. But it sounds like this guy has really gone a little bit over the deep end in it.
As far as Canada is concerned, well, the courts in Canada are a little bit more formal than our courts. Is that right?
They're more patterned more after the British system. Well, we have to end the show pretty soon here. We're at the end of it. Unfortunately, the hour flies by. Let me remind you that next week we're going to have Bill Montgomery on, county attorney, and the week after that, Sheriff Joe Arpaio will be on the show, and we'll have some fun with both of them. In the meantime, you all stay well, and if you have any issues that you want to raise, give us a call next week, Wednesday, 4 to 5. This is Dennis Mulinchek, KFNN, 277-KFNX. Have a good week, and we'll see you next time.
Is there really an energy shortage? Tune in Thursday night at 8 p.m. for the Renewable Power Hour, where host Jason Leopold will apply his degree in engineering to the question, how will we power the future? The Renewable Power Hour, Thursday at 8 p.m.
Executive Towers Barber Salon in Phoenix wants to remind everyone that every day, 2,500 teens use a prescription drug to get high for the first time. Protect your kids from prescription drug abuse by remembering to monitor, secure, and dispose. For information, call 1-800-662-HELP. This message, courtesy of Executive Towers Barber Salon in Phoenix, trust their years of experience for premium hair care service. Call Executive Towers Barber Salon at 602-265-6975. That's 602-265-6975. Mention this ad to receive a $5 discount on a wash and cut.
You'll sweat through a hot Saturday afternoon in August. Wait out the monsoon in your red and blue poncho and freeze through those late winter nights. If it's game day, you're there supporting your Wildcats. We know the type. We are the type. And we're right there by your side with a full line of banking services to support your immediate and long-term goals. From checking accounts and auto loans to home equity lines of credit, we'll be there for you no matter what life throws at you now and in the future. Bank of Arizona. Long live your money. Member FDIC.
KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
News, weather, and traffic.
Cave Creek, Phoenix. A division of Premier Radio Stations, LLC.